Welcome back. Good morning for the third installment, right? There is no handout today, but I brought extras for the first and second days if you missed that. So we're excited about the new creative ways to worship and have ritual. Thank you, Al.
Thanks for those of you who are just headed out for diving in right at this last minute. So thanks so very much. We're going to turn the plans a little bit upside down because we're going to try to pull off a couple of things online to show you from websites. So that means that the upside downness of it is I wanted us to start really.
Your mic, Hill. Sorry.
I wanted us to start with some perspectives that weren't just Christian, but now I'm going to bombard you with four Christian sites, and we'll get to some other considerations later on. But Jonah promised to hold my hand on seeing if this could happen here. Okay, so this is, some of you may even know St. Lydia's. Anybody know St. Lydia's? Great, yeah, so this is the only Lutheran thing I'm gonna show you. It's a church in New York City, and it's called basically a dinner church. It's been going for over 10 years. I've been there myself, and just want to show you a little bit about some things they do. I'm just going to show you one short video. Maybe I'm going to show you one.
One of the things I love the most about St. Lydia's is that it's a thing still in the process of becoming, and that's part of its identity. Is to gather together around a meal and around a table. The idea is that when we're at this table together, there's a way in which we're practicing for how we'd like to be when we're out in the world. So it's a table where we learn how to feed one another and where we learn how to be fed. It's a table where we learn to be compassionate with one another and patient with one another. And it's a table where we learn to be open to God's presence and to spend time sort of feeling that movement and that presence in our lives. We start our worship by gathering around a central candle and singing a lamp lighting hymn. And we all light our own candles from that one central candle and pass the fire from one person to the next.
Sorry, Al.
Okay.
That's, yeah, it's...
All right.
It's as much as we get for
that. Yeah, okay, thank you. And then should I, I'll just say goodbye to St. Lydia, say a little bit more about them. So what you don't see is them eating together, doing a lot of talking together, beautiful setting in on the street is kind of looks like a restaurant from the outside. Doesn't look like a church at all. Have you been there?
I've been there, but the church Asaph and I attend in Western Mass is similar, but it's a farm-to-table church where we grow most of our own food, actually, and freeze and can and preserve it for the winter. And we've actually been able to have, there's some local grains that have a bakery make us a local bread out of local wheat.
Wow.
And Sarah, who's the pastor, it's called Common Ground, St. Lydia mentored her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's also one in central Massachusetts that has a bakery associated that hires homeless people.
Yeah.
And has a dinner church also.
I think there are several hundred dinner churches now.
Yeah.
As far as I know, I'm probably underestimating that. Well, let me show you another one to see if it goes.
How big are these?
Can I try to do my showing and then talking? Thank you. This is the only other video here.
Might not work.
Let's see. It might not work.
Oh, the camera's this big. Okay.
Try to refresh.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. See what happens. St. Miriam's?
If you're Catholic and have recently come across St. Miriam, we're glad.
Oops.
Bandwidth is.
So, okay, let's say goodbye to St. Miriam.
If you're Catholic and have recently come across St. Miriam, we're glad our paths have crossed. You might be interested to know that St. Miriam...
Okay, there we go. Okay. Bye, St. Miriam. I'll talk to you about that a little bit. There's a couple of others that don't have videos, but just websites. It's not quite so... complicated. Okay. This is a Philadelphia church.
Oh, okay.
United Methodist and UCC. This has no audio. I'm just going to show you pictures of kind of what happens in their worship. Lots of inside and outside worship. Lots of beautiful things in the setting, lots of movement, a fair amount of dance. This is a baptism outside, fairly conventional worship setting, but it's in the round, not unlike this, but probably about 3 or 4 times as big. Lots of dogs and cats, and special days for them and special not. This kind of dancing and other dancing in their church. Lots of drama as well. Goodbye to Philadelphia. Now North Carolina. Do any of you know Jubilee Fellowship? It's also quite famous. I'll show you some pictures and then one other part of it.
Could you pull the sidebar down so we can see the whole picture?
Could I?
There.
Yes, that would be nice, wouldn't it? This is an ecological focus for a church, so they do a lot of work in ecology in their worship and in their ritual. So a lot of that has to do with again in the round has to do with their work in the community and also takes pretty seriously worship and ecology together. So this is what's called a creation spirituality. Let's see if we can get that going here. Maybe we can. Creation spirituality is a more or less Christian movement founded by Matthew Fox. So I'll just let you read a little bit about how they think of themselves. Matt Fox, whom I know fairly well, is not really involved in this, but their church, which is now 30 years old, has really taken its shape from Matt's writings. Interesting. They're fairly exact in their articulation of what they do. So this are their principles. This also comes, I think this writing is actually from Matthew Fox. Yeah, and here we'll get the four ways, and these are all the vias or the ways that they follow, and this is kind of an ecological liturgical season. So the Via Transformativa is the spring. They have specific rhythms to that. The summer is Via Positiva, time of natural resurrection, new life springing forth from the earth. The fall, Via Negativa, a period of celebration as we contemplate the mysteries that surround us, the black holes of the universe, for the nature of our own souls. And then winter, Via Creativa, from the apparent dormancy of the winter months, we are called to explore the imagination and creativity that underlie all of creation at every moment. So that's what I could and couldn't show you. Let me then back up to what I didn't show you a little bit, some of the things that were going to be on the screen. I just like the way electronics are compromised in our presence here. So that's both a healthy and frustrating thing for us. So St. Lydia's is a Lutheran church. It's a dinner church. It is almost entirely people under 40. The staff and the congregation, the people. Someone asked how big it was. So my experience is that they also, by the way, in the morning they have waffle church, mm-hmm. and in the evening dinner church. The waffle church is much more focused on children, and obviously a dinner church isn't really good for 5-year-olds anyway, because it'd be too late. I would say that they vary between about 30 people in the space to about 60. You're shaking your head on this.
Similar.
Yeah, right.
Size, yeah.
But they because they have two services, morning and evening, it feels to me like the amount of people regularly involved is about 150. And you have a lot of people coming in and out. This is very typical of growing congregations in our time, that folks will, you need to think about how, who's there every month to think who belongs. So people know that there are more important things to do than go to church, and they do those things as well. St. Miriam's that we just saw a little bit of, I always like to show folks, because it is a Catholic church. It names itself Catholic and is not Roman Catholic. It's called what's called Old Catholic. They're really quite strong. They are a sanctuary church, so they actively harbor illegal immigrants in their space. They are extremely queer friendly, and they are quite sociopolitically active, but frankly, in terms of the way their worship works, they're working as hard as possible to look like a regular Catholic church. Except that the church is probably more diverse, but what they do is they're trying to make a space for regular old Catholics who would like to have queer-friendly and much more open-ended community together. All of the priests there have been kicked out of the Roman Catholic Church and are just in the middle of trying to forge a new denomination, really. You saw Chestnut Hill United Church in Philadelphia, the one in the round and the one with so much art going on, lots of different kinds of music there. The music is not performed so much as participated in, so much of the music is quite sophisticated, lots of instruments. Reminds me a lot of Holden spaces in the abilities that are there, and they're probably more active in getting non-church music into their worship. So a lot of Sweet Honey in the Rock, if any of you know Sweet Honey in the Rock, and a lot of other world music sort of fit together along with maybe one out of every three or four hymns. Let's stop there for a moment. So I have a list of about 25 churches that I show to folks that are to show where they are around the country. I've not found any place in the country where you don't have very innovative and strong new kinds of worship and ritual all around the country, I think. And they're always a minority, meaning that usually there are a lot of other churches. There are more churches declining than growing and being creative. So I'm just wanting to give a little bit of a sense as we end this weekend and start some other work here at Holden as to what worship and ritual is like, to make, after yesterday being so focused on why churches are declining, I want to keep in the congregation or in the conversation a real sense that, as I alluded to yesterday, it feels to me as if what you've got is about two-thirds of all churches in the United States declining rapidly, and in all denominations. And about up to one third, depending, this depends a little bit more on the part of the country, but up to one third that are growing creatively. That would include the evangelicals. I talked a little bit about evangelicals. It seemed like from 1970 to 2000, the only churches that were growing were evangelical. I don't think that's true, but it was more true then than now. And I see I see a lot of really creative things going on in growing evangelical churches as well. And so I frankly am not, I don't tend to think of the evangelicals as the bad people and the liberals as the good people in this. I think there's a lot more complication going on in people trying to do creative and aliveness in their worship. Although I myself was raised in evangelical, I had a very gentle departure from evangelicalism, and I'm now considered wildly liberal, whatever that might be. I want to stop here then, and I've got a bunch of more things that I would want us to have in conversation. But let's just see what thoughts and questions you have about real communities. I'll talk more about non-churches in a minute, but real communities that are doing worship in innovative ways and being quite connected to a bunch of deep traditions of Christianity as well. Let's just either tell stories a little bit or have questions and thoughts. Yes?
I'm curious with this model if the biblical teaching is still present or if it's kind of moved away from teaching the biblical principles and moving to just a more general
spiritual. Yeah. So again, the first thing I would want to say is there is no model. What's really interesting, for instance, is no denominations are leading any of this. Denominations tend to work on models, but you find these things just springing up with nobody telling them what to do, and so I've been in that. Those kind of things most of my life as a pastor, and I've been working with folks around the country, and I still can't find the model. But your question is really important anyway in terms of Bible, but it only illustrates my point. There are Bible freaks among these people and people who don't like the Bible very much. There are people who are bouncing mostly off some denominational or some other kinds of articulations, some of which have a lot of Bible in it and some of which don't. I mean, since I'm a Bible professor, among other things, and love the Bible, I tend to be more interested in those. But I would say, as I've looked at what seems to me to be a wonderful hodgepodge of creativity, I can't find a good answer that would be clear. I just say, yeah, it's all over the map. Would you have a follow-up to that to make sure I've got what you were asking?
Yeah, I was just curious from the ones that you've seen and other people here, is there somebody that teaches the Bible, or is it more just coming together and eating and singing and, like, from what you've seen?
I would repeat again saying it depends on the local church as to how that's answered. But I would say
everybody is interested in the Bible. Some are focused on the Bible, and some are ambivalent about the Bible, but all are addressing it. Now, there's some that, the ones that have been kind of stung by the Bible too much, they just address it around the edges. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of others. There are a lot of folks in these kind of congregations that are young that don't know the Bible. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be, but again, that can work itself out both ways. They can say, hey, I want to learn the Bible, and there's some people to help them be with the Bible. And there are others who say, I don't know the Bible, I can get along. I just want to be alive and in relationship to one another and maybe to God. So
yes.
I'm still okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, Paul.
Just thinking about St. Louis, there may not be a model across all the things that you would show and tell about, but being a part of St. Lydia's back in 2009 and 10, maybe 11 a little bit, that was, I would almost say they could claim being rooted in Scripture. In other words, the liturgy is based on the Didache, which would be a community rule from early Christian practice.
And which is not in the Bible.
Right. So I think it brings in tradition and Scripture, because I don't remember many worship services at St. Lydia's that didn't have a gospel reading and then a reflection on that gospel reading from someone in the community. Usually it was Emily, but and that person was always the person who blessed elements. Because, by the way, too, I mean, there was a Eucharist aspect at every... at every St. Lydia's worship, and that was really important in the beginning, that person, whoever blessed that, was ordained. But there was no affiliation with the denomination. And it's interesting, as the denominations are on the decline, St. Lydia's went through a process where they decided if they wanted to align with Lutheran denomination, mm-hmm. and we decided yes, even though I was like, no way. And then by the end of that, process, I was like, okay. So it was a really great experience from a decision-making process, too. So I also can't imagine St. Miriam not being rooted in the Bible, yeah. but that would be a speculative piece from mm-hmm. my perspective. Mm-hmm. And the other model, that, or not model, but the other place that I think of is Gregory of Nyssa. In,
mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I'm exactly. fairly sure that's biblically...
Yes.
I mean, that's super important as well.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, that's that for me is a nice elaboration of the Bible side of it. But I have to tell you, there are bunch of them that aren't.
Right.
yes.
We're from the Wheaton area, and so coming from Wheaton, kind of the epicenter of evangelicalism,
sure.
And I worked at Wheaton College forever. And what was interesting to me coming in there as a Lutheran is pretty much what you're saying, where people go to a church for a year and then they hop to another church for another year or 6 months, and then they go to one. So there's not this membership kind of a thing. It's mm-hmm. and it's a variety from big box to small home churches. One question that I have is just to confirm what you're saying when you're talking about praise band and that kind of thing. Are you referencing like the big box churches where it's more performance happening up here and you're just an observer, to now people saying, no, I want to be a part of what's happening up mm-hmm. front? Mm-hmm. So is that where the decline is happening?
Again, I want to characterize myself as somewhat short of being a praise band expert. But I do, I actually, what I experienced from 1970 on for a good three decades was it wasn't just the evangelicals that were doing praise band, but as soon as the evangelicals started doing praise bands, by the mid-80s, there were praise bands everywhere. And they had a standard model. A lot of the music was borrowed from evangelicalism. And I saw in the so-called mainline churches, I saw that flourishing in the late 80s and 90s. But I saw overall, I guess I want to say that the music started being tired by the late 90s. And both in evangelical circles and in so-called mainline churches, and I don't like that term, by the way. I haven't found another one except the ones that are dying the quickest. But I think that I've heard from a lot of musicians, and they're saying that was a good run, and there was some shallowness and limits to it, both musically and spiritually. Mm-hmm. What I hear now, in terms of music, that seems to be really flourishing again across a major section of churches that are alive, is what I call eclectic. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like everything under the sun, and really loving to have a hymn in the middle of some rock music, in the middle of some music from India, all kinds of things going on, even within one service. So they don't seem to to have, and now we're going to have the praise music Sunday, and now we're going to have the African Sunday or something like that. I find it enormously creative, open, and self-critical, and very humble in the way it relates to a lot of different nations and peoples around the world. There needs to be about 3 or 4 books written on that movement right now, I think. And there probably is, because these folks are really good. And they, by and large, don't know each other.
From my admittedly very limited experience with a few of these kinds of creative churching ideas, they have seemed to be built around either a very inspired leader or pastor or somebody with a great art or music gift. And I wonder, from your experience, do these things tend to come and go with people like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Jubilee Fellowship, that's probably the oldest of the ones I showed you online, is totally that. So Howard Hanger was, I think, Presbyterian. Anybody know?
Mm-hmm.
And got sick of the Presbyterians, but he was also a jazz musician. Mm-hmm. So he wrote hundreds of songs that they all learned. He also was almost always the preacher. I've seen, and the fact that I can still pull up his face on their web page, I think is totally crazy, because I know, what was it? I think it was in the 1980s that Susan and I were down there with them, and he was old then. But there's nothing like someone my age or a little bit older to try to hold on to everything and keep things under control. I think the baby boomers tended especially towards this kind of thing. But I want to say, there are a lot of churches that are not like that. There are a lot of them that, so for instance, even though St. Lydia's had strong leadership, they really pressed to have governance from a wide range of people. And I think that's at least as much the model. Yes?
There's another phenomena I haven't seen on the West Coast, but on the East Coast, especially around North Carolina, that's pretty huge. I mean, you'll see hundreds of people go to beer and hymn sings.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And those are really rowdy people holding beer and belting out these really old type of gospel, sin and salvation, damnation hymns. And they occur a lot of places on the East Coast, especially in North Carolina,
yeah.
regularly.
Well, but if we're not, yes, and I don't know those folks.
Yeah. I've been to
them. I mean, and I have to say, I mean, and this is no professional opinion at all, but I've never been able to like hymns.
Yeah.
And I'm not a musician and don't know how to read music.
I mean, they sing it with passion.
The other note, but something that's like that but really different in North Carolina is the Wild Goose Festival.
That's where they
anybody know Wild Goose Festival? Have you been there?
Quite a few times, yeah.
Could you say, because it's one of the most...
well, that's where I went to beer and hymn sing is a big feature there, but it's... They call themselves Intersection of Faith, Community, and Art. And so it's Christian focused, and they'll have a lot of Christian names like Brian McLaren, Jim Wallace, a whole host of people come. William Barber came, and it's
Nadia
Weber, you know, a lot of different people that are known, but also unknown people too. And it's a lot of young people and a fair amount of evangelical young people.
It started as evangelical, if I understand. But
Catholic workers.
Oh.
And it's a wonderful festival where you can't, most everyone camps, and it goes on from 9 in the morning till 2 in the morning with music, and so it's really worth going to if you're interested. And then there's a big emphasis on visual arts, too.
Yeah, yeah. And although I've never been there, I work with a lot of people who are there, and I would say it's becoming way more liberal than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's really an intersectional thing is exactly the way it's starting to move, I think. I want to just, beside opining, I want to talk a little bit more and get some of your thoughts as well. When I think about Holden, and again, I'm not an expert on Holden. I've only been here 11 times teaching, and only in the last 5 years, half of what I taught was to the remediators. So I mean, I was here teaching when the remediation was going on. But so I don't. I begin to think about this at these invitations this year to do some teaching on it, and I noticed that what Holden is a really wonderful question right now, and Melinda alluded to that last night in her remarks, and it seems to me that the authenticness of Holden as an educational institution, as a retreat institution, as a community, maybe as an ecological place, those are really interesting that's full of tension in terms of how one has worship and what rituals one has. I don't bring any thoughts except, oh, look, there are different constituencies in this place that is so vibrant for me. And so one of the things I think in terms of pondering what kind of worship Holden may be called to, other than what it has, or alongside of what it has, probably has also to think really a lot about the different constituencies and the different overlaps of identities. Again, partly because I don't know that thoroughly enough, and partly because it sounds like a question that's too hard for me. I just raise that for thinking. And again, to think of Holden as a particular place which has its own possibilities and rhythms of worship and ritual is like everybody else. It's an ongoing set of changes. If it thinks it has it, it doesn't. In other words, at least from what I think of as we talked on Saturday, it feels to me like worship and ritual is more about being present to differences and changes than having an answer for them. One of the things that worship and ritual do most is just bring a presence or two or three into a space and let people live into it. That's another just note here. So that Holden is both different in its identity and very similar to a lot of worshiping, ritualizing places. Both seem to be helpful to think about as one would go forward there. I do want to stay a little bit also on the importance of music in the larger question of new kinds of worship and ritual. And here, so for instance, excellence in music really means a lot. So if we're in the middle of feeling something that is difficult or joyous, it goes deeper inside us if the music's good. So I just want to say it's really, music is so important in this, and you see musicians leading all over the country in really wonderful ways. Often, of course, you'll find in worshiping places, worshiping communities, you'll find really creative leading musicians who aren't a part of the community. Mm-hmm. Sometimes 5 or 10 of them. Mm-hmm. It seems to me a core set of questions and possibilities about music. So I would just, for what it's worth, say some of the things I'm seeing in the last 10 years in music specifically. So I'm hearing a lot more chant. I'm hearing a lot less hymns. Those are not opposed to one another. But for me, chant, for instance, is a part of this larger growing into world music. So that's just one part of world music in ways that different modalities than classical music or hymns seems to be a major part of what's going on. Not that it is putting down classical music or hymns. In fact, folks really like to mix them up together. And again, I talked about lots of instruments. Holden is so good at that, I think, you know, just like last night. there's such a difference between having a whole bunch of instruments helping a whole bunch of people come together and feel deeper, that's not nothing. One of the things also that is going on, of course, is a lot of musical composition. Mm-hmm. So as people move away from the established music, there's just a lot of musicians writing stuff. I notice in congregational life, where this is lively, often it's music that's not written by the in-house people. It's often some music that you hear on the radio, and they say, yeah, I'd like to sing that in my community. And the musicians get together and do it. Or sometimes they compose new things. There, at least as far as I can see, the music and the lyrics are both up for grabs in terms of what happens within a vibrant community. And so this thing about spiritual but not religion, not religious, that is going on. Some of you know that the Pew Foundation, which is one of the major students of what's going on in religion in America, says that spiritual but not religious is the largest religious group in the country.
Nuns are the fastest growing population.
Nuns are the fastest growing. But then, if you take the fastest growing and the ones who haven't changed recently, it's the spiritual but not religious. And that's a kind of a funny label. But what I want to say about music in that regard is those folks really know how to write music and write lyrics. And so what I'm seeing a lot is people who are not quite sure they want to go inside a church. They will write a song with music and lyrics, which actually speak to the people in some of these congregations that are growing. So,
I got it.
Oh no, I've got it right here. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Let's talk just a little bit about what I call festival worship, not congregational worship. It feels to me like a lot of things, that this is not unrelated to what I've been saying about pro football. That is, people can worship in big groups that are not necessarily churches. And so Wild Goose is a great example of this. This is kind of like a rock festival. And it's kind of like a church, and it's neither. Or both. So the possibilities of having music events become worship, whether that's a part of a religion or not, seems to matter less to me than things happening deeply in groups of people and in individuals in terms of how they process their lives. Ecological events, not just that aren't just music, but you know, going and celebrating something in a certain place, that's a powerful natural space, has lots of festival kind of possibilities. I find myself fantasizing, frankly, about more of that happening here. Mm-hmm. Where it's not necessarily inside a official ritual space, But there's so many places that we are worshiping already here. Yeah.
There was a little piece in the Lutheran a couple of years ago about this little group called Holy Hikes. Yeah. And they take hikes and then they have communion. And what I left about is, I'm sorry, everybody, like they were from Ohio. I'm thinking, well, I guess if they can find a beautiful place in Ohio, like, how easy would it be like, to do that here?
Somebody's partner's going to attack you from Ohio.
It's just so obvious that a place like Holden or any place in the Northwest that you'd be able to go and have a fabulous 3-hour hike. And then if you're having a communion or a Eucharist during it, that would be just great. So I'm trying to talk with friends to see if we can make that happen in a small way where I live, but it would be a natural here.
Yeah, and I work with a big church in downtown Boulder, Colorado, as a consultant and a theologian in residence, and they regularly, once every month, they just simply do a hike as their worship. But here, I mean, we already sort of know how to worship outside, but it seems like, again, most of worship and ritual that gets built takes time and lots of experiences over, as I said, generations. But here we've already got some of the generations working. And what would it be like to, you know, invite 100 more people up to do something like that? So not just for the folks inside Holden, but to make it a space where the earth is engaged ritually, engaged as worship. That also would be an interesting way of recognizing that Holden is a community and it's not a community. That is, there are people who really have this as a community, and there are people who come and visit that community. That could be a really interesting way to learn more about how we ritualize and worship. I'm going to stop here and give generously the last 4 minutes to anybody.
So I was a music director at a church in Wheaton for 33 years and thought, well, that seemed like a big number, so maybe I should retire.
Uh-huh.
And that lasted 6 weeks. And what I realized as the musician is that I never got tired of the job, you know, the task.
Wow.
And so, you know, it was like Sunday morning, you have to get up earlier than other days of the week even. Mm-hmm. And yet that there was always something that drew me into the worship experience. And as a musician, I think there's a line between you can have a performance and you can play all the notes right, but that's not where the life happens, and or even the music really. Mm-hmm. And it happens to me, as I was thinking about the last couple of days here, in those moments, and I realized that I never played the same thing twice the same way. And so it's being open to that movement of the Spirit, I think, is how I would say, to make it an alive moment. So it was always alive for me. And I do think that, you know, the musician, you know, in the church does have a big impact on everybody else there. So, you know, after you leave someplace, I don't know what happens, but now I'm in a new place and getting to know them and seeing some of that same aliveness. And I've been surprised. And that's the thing, I think, is that it's always that element of surprise where you say, that's it. It happened, you know. And I'm hoping that other people feel that too. And it's come in a couple of really surprising ways. And we're in a congregation in Oak Park, Illinois right now. At the end of one service, I was telling Christy this, there were, one of the hymns was an African hymn. So it was picked, and so we're singing it away, and all of a sudden a conga line forms. And I didn't realize this church had that in them. And so for me, it was a wonderful surprise. And then what do you do with it? You got a conga line going, and it's coming to an end. So, you have to think on your feet. You know, what's next?
Yeah, I just had that happen in a mm-hmm. A synagogue. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, people were up and dancing. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's that mystery of what do you do next. You know, it's all scripted in some degree, but you have freedom there too. And so that's, to me, where the aliveness happens.
Yeah. You all have given this hour in a really important way, so I know everybody has to do things. Thanks so much, and hope to be together with folks, some of you, this summer and in other ways. Thanks so much.